Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 29 on July 27th, 2018. On this episode, I speak with Christine Dutcher, better known as Sweet Prodigy on Instagram and Facebook, with her stunning geometric cookie art. So whether you're sitting down to pipe 1,000 lines of royal icing, washing up a pile of 00 piping tips, or driving your latest client order to the venue, let's get this show started to entertain and inspire you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is Christine Dutcher from Sweet Prodigy in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Christine.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I've been worshiping your gorgeous cookies on Facebook, and I don't even really do Instagram, but just trolling through your Instagram is just like, oh, it's so pretty.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. But you know what? Most of this is honestly, it's me experimenting. Just me doing kind of crazy things and that sort of thing. I tried doing, years ago, flowers and regular cookies. And I think I failed at it. At best, I blend in and that sort of thing. So I always wanted to try, different things. And I see a lot of people with, airbrushes and stencils and that sort of thing. And there was me with my lonely piping bag and my few different colors. And honestly, I just experiment. That's what you see on my page is experiment. But I'm glad you like it.
It's super effective. I mean, I'm married to a mathematician, so, and I loved my spirographs. I just really love your designs. Yeah. Well, so let's tell the audience so the kind of stuff you make. You're primarily doing cookies. You're selling cupcakes as well now. You are selling cookies too, right?
They are for sale. I do have occasional sales. So if anyone wants to buy them, they're definitely for sale. Most of what you see that I post, obviously, is probably things that you can't sell. Well, you can sell, but they'd be kind of pricey. But yeah, definitely cookies are for sale. So and that's, I guess, more of the regular stuff. So flowers, just regular cookies. And I did something for a welcome baby, and some for my daughter's choir as well. So things like that. Yeah, no problem selling them. I do like it. But honestly, my passion, I think, is more for, the lines and the needle points and the dots and that sort of thing, and the really complicated pieces.
Right, yeah, the pieces that attracted me to your page in the first place.
Yeah, actually, probably tell you how I got started with all of this. I think it was Christmas of 2012. My daughter had gotten a cupcake maker for Christmas. And I think up until that point, honestly, what I had done for cookies was shortbread cookies and some icing with water mixed on it and poured onto it and sprinkles and that sort of thing. So honestly, I really didn't know a lot about cookie decorating. So what I did was when she got her cupcake maker, I thought, I'll Google amazing cupcakes. So I ended up Googling amazing cupcakes and was amazed at the beautiful, beautiful cupcakes with fondant and buttercream and that sort of thing out there. I couldn't believe it. And going through that search and on Pinterest and that sort of thing, I ended up discovering cookies. And so I literally, oh my gosh, my kids would go to bed and 2 o'clock in the morning, I would be on the computer for, hours. Honestly, that's because that was the only time I had to myself. So right. When you're a mom, but I would just be up on the computer just staring at these designs and reading the tutorials. And there weren't that many videos out there as opposed to, what's out there now. Looking at the videos and studying them and just hours and hours and months went by, but just taking it all in. And then October 2013 is when I made my first set of cookies, which actually is on my Instagram page. It's not that good, the set of cookies, but I was proud of it at the time. And I just, like everyone else, I got hooked. And I spent more time studying and more time practicing and not a lot of really good designs at first. And I honestly, I only did cookies probably a few times in the year, just, school bake sales or, if there's a holiday, family holiday coming up and I could kind of practice and unload my cookies on them or something and that sort of thing. And then I think it was January 2016 is when I decided that I would actually start to get serious and just kind of hone in on my skills and just focus. And that's when I discovered kind of around that time needlepoint cookies. And yeah, I just started doing that. And honestly, I know a lot of people say it takes patience and that sort of thing, but it's not patience. It's hard to explain. It's almost like a therapeutic.
Right.
And I guess when you have kids and chaos is kind of the order of the day and you're here and you're piping these straight lines and these straight dots and everything is nice and neat and orderly and calm. So it's almost like my escapism, I think, something like that. But I once you start doing these things, like anyone who decorates cookies or even I'm sure cakes and that sort of thing, it's almost addictive.
Yes,
and
it is.
You can't stop doing it.
Yeah, and then you think about it when you should be sleeping and
But that's how that came about with the lines and with the needlepoint. My lines, sometimes they're basically experiments. A lot of what you see is just literally me experimenting. And color, I think when you look at, for me, I think color is so important. Mm-hmm. If you picture a cake and you can picture beautiful, soft with, if it's got flowers, for example, soft pink flowers versus, something that's maybe mossy and not too good. The colors can make a huge difference. So also I think a lot of what you see is me trying different colors and color combinations and figuring that out too and what's going to look good. Because I think even if I were to do just lines, for example, or just dots or whatever, I think color is really, really important as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how you feel about that, but I think that's what's important.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that's one of the things that's really cool about some of your designs is at the first glance, it feels like a bazillion colors, and then you realize it's three, and it's just because of your lines or the way you've put it out, like again in the spirography thing or the crossing lines. It's tricking the eye into feeling like it's this huge range, but it's actually not sometimes.
Yeah. And also, I think it's sometimes the way they're combined, if you do, darker colors on the bottom and lighter colors on the top. And I have actually one cookie or one pattern. I've got it. It shows two different cookies, and it's a circle cookie, and it's the exact same pattern, but I changed the piping sequence on it. So it's basically the rainbow colors.
Right.
And putting, putting red on the bottom for the piping sequence. And then the next cookie, I piped the exact same pattern, but where the red was piped, it was piped on the top, and it's two completely different outcomes. That's another one of my experiments, but I thought that was kind of an interesting, experiment that I did.
And it is so cool, and it does, I mean, you can even then see in terms of, color theory and the design and the set, like if you were making a custom set for sale, if anyone ever felt like paying what you should charge for these cookies. I know everyone listening totally is on board understanding that. But like if you were getting that, like if you a corporate client or someone who may actually pay what it's worth, you can see how even with just the basic, I mean, I'm saying basic, but that's not disrespecting the incredible skill. Just the in terms of it is just a series of lines, but by changing the order, you're getting such a different effect, but they'll all match because they're all the same palette.
Yes. And also too, I think when it comes to color, I honestly don't have a lot of supplies out there. And I know there's so many, such a range of colors, but I guess when I went to school and college, one of the things I took was color theory. And I'm so glad I took it because I learned that, for example, if you have a pink, a vibrant pink, and you want to tone it down, I think I read a lot of people saying they add black
But to me, it almost muddies it or dirties it. And what we learned in school is that you would add the opposite color on the color wheel. So I would add a touch of green to it. And that's actually going to make it more of a muted pink as opposed to adding the black. So I have a bunch of stars. And it's just the same. It's a teal color. But with that one, what I did was the color that it came out, I used, it's Wilson. And I used their Kelly Green and their Royal Blue. And then instead of adding pink, which would have been the other opposite color on the color wheel, I actually added violet. And it gives it to me what I think is, it's a teal color, but it's a teal color unlike any other teal color that's out there. Not like buying, you know, you can buy a custom, you can buy some, you know, from one of the manufacturers, you can buy, I guess, a teal color. But this is something that's different than what you could find anywhere else. So for me, when I do color, that's what I'm always trying to think about is what can I do that is different, but with the basic colors that I have.
So once you've like decided, like you figured out, oh, this ratio proportion of colors mixed makes this other good color, do you then mix that for each individual icing batch, or do you like mix yourself a pot so you can have a consistent bunch of batches?
That's for each individual one. So, and sometimes, honestly, I'm going to tell you, sometimes it takes me an hour to mix a color.
I believe it.
I probably could make a living at it. But sometimes, like for the teal, for example, that it took a long time just to kind of to stir it and to look at the color and tweak it a bit and that sort of thing. And thinking of what color, like I had, when I had done that, I was originally going to, with the star pattern, I was originally going to do just everything in this multi-color, multi-tone. So I was going to do a white, a light teal, and I think a medium teal, and all together. And once I started piping those few colors, it actually, those cookies with all that, with the three colors, it just looked really, really busy. So if you look at the set that I did, if I had photographed it with each cookie having three different shades on it, it just would have looked super, super busy to the eye. So what I did was I did some solid colors in there as well and mixed it in so it's pleasing to the eye. So whenever I do a set, that's, you know, part of, because we're, you know, on Instagram and Facebook and it's photographs, so part of it is also how is it going to be pleasing to the eye when I photograph it and show it online. And that's another thing as well. So I added in some solid colors as well with that mix. And I think that looks good. So every time I'm doing something online, I'm posting a picture or making a cookie, the two things I always think of are what's the pattern and what colors are going to complement the pattern. And obviously the pattern would complement the colors. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that combination that I guess makes it appealing.
I'm looking at, I assume the picture you mean right now, it's the one that's on your About Me, where it's got the multi-teals and then like some white up, you know, up and, you know, above that sort of cut off in the picture. And it's a gorgeously effective photo because, I mean, stars being what they are and you having lined up the top edge, well, not the top, but like the straight top edge of each star with all of your lines, it's such a beautiful, compelling photo. And then you look at it as like a sugar artist and you're like, oh my God, piping.
And, oh, and I have to tell you, lining up this, I think I spend about half an hour lining up the stars.
Oh, I believe it.
Because when I line up in the
because it matters. You know? And then the shading and like the shot, like it's a really, it's, you know, photographically speaking, it's a beautiful photo. And sugar art speaking, it's making my hand want to drop off.
Yeah, I think if someone were to order these, for example, I'm obviously not going to spend that much time being that detailed because people will most likely eat them and they don't study them. But when you post these things online, I know people are going to be zooming in and scrutinizing it. So, you know, I try and be as detailed and as, I guess, accurate as possible. For it. But yeah, lining up the photos, the same thing. Oh my word. I think I spend, I don't know. I take hundreds of photos and yeah, I can spend a good half hour at the very least just setting things up for the pictures, but it's almost like it's the best way to showcase it and to display it and that sort of thing. I think that's also importance as well. Mm-hmm. Lines, I love the lines, doing that. And also going into the 3D. I don't know if you've seen some of the 3D cookies that I've done, 3D icing.
Do you mean the one where you put it in your dehumidifier thingy and it curled up?
Yeah, it didn't really happen.
Oh, okay. I was like, was that how that happened? Because I'm not sure how that works.
On April the 1st, that's when it happened.
Oh, yes. I'm looking at the post now. I didn't even notice that was a joke. I was like, wow, really? Does that what that? Because I don't have a dehydrator, so.
Yeah, okay. I don't have one either, so. I don't have one. That was actually for that one. Again, that's another experiment. That was just me. I piped really, really quickly that pattern on acetate, and I used a thinner icing consistency so it wouldn't dry quickly, and I just basically curved the acetate up and held it in place, and then once it dried, it came off. And mm-hmm.
That makes a lot more sense, actually, because I was thinking, well, what? Because I'm looking at the post now, and I'm noticing that I had reacted with a wow, because you know I'm tired a lot, and I remember thinking, what's she putting in her royal that it's so elastic that it would actually do? And I remember having that thought process and just going, oh, I don't understand this. This is a foo beyond me. But yeah, okay, it was April 1st. That was you got me. Yeah. You punked me.
It's okay. I got a lot of people on that one.
So, I probably even shared it too. So, but yeah, I mean, doing it over a form would make that was if you hadn't said that, that's how I would have assumed you'd done that.
Yeah, that was a good one. I thought that was a funny one.
I think I would have initially assumed like you'd put wax or grease proof or whatever we call it. Yeah, I'm in so many different countries right now. Canadian, American, living in England. I don't know what it's called. Wax deep paper. I would assume you would have done that, like, or a plastic thing over like the Wilton former things that come in the different sized arcs.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, I just regular acetate.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then that's how I actually do a lot of my, whenever I pipe a pattern, I don't want to pipe it right on the cookie because, you know, once you pipe it on, you can't take it off. And if you make a mistake, there's a cookie wasted. So what I do a lot of times is I just experiment on the acetate. And it's honestly just regular business acetate, like for business folders, mm-hmm. that I got at the business depot. But I pipe on acetate and experiment and icing sugar is not that expensive. I guess, you know, when there's no work involved because the icing's already made as opposed to having to make a cookie and then throw it out. So I just literally just practice all my stuff on acetate. And then if I like it, then I pipe it onto a cookie. And I actually did do a post too where I piped a whole bunch of icing patterns. It's on a blue background, but I just basically piped a whole bunch of royal icing patterns on acetate, and then I removed them and put them on a sheet of paper and photographed it. And those were my what I call sketches, my royal icing sketches. And then from that, I made my cookies and using color. So these ones were just regular white royal icing sketches, and then yeah, turned them into color, and actually a couple of them ended up being 3D. So
yeah, they were really cool. I'm trying to I just had it up in your Facebook, but I'm gonna have to put links in the show notes to all these, or just possibly just link and say go, everyone just go troll through your page for an hour and be happy. But yeah, because that, again, being married to a math, there it is, it's on from January 13th. Yeah, it's so mathematical. I remember showing that one to my husband and being like, look at this, and he was like, oh yeah. Because like he can tell you that like there's formulae, you know, that makes these things, and I'm enough of a geek to know that there's a formula and not enough of one to know what it is.
I like the, you know what I think? I think with the, in terms of the math, I know I've always loved math, but I think with maybe in how it comes out in my artwork, I think is because math is so logical and, you know, there's so much pattern and number. And I always think it's so fascinating the way math is and with pattern and you know, when you create artwork and you know, when I think everything, you know, the ancient Greeks, how they used math and that sort of thing with their buildings and construction. It's just, to me, it's just fascinating. Even the human form is mathematical, and so I think in terms of aesthetics, it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and I love. I mean, because you're not even. It's not like you're all angular. We joke because again we're nerds. We joke there's the elf and the dwarf, right? Because in Lord of the Rings the dwarven stuff is all very angular, and the elven stuff is all very, you know, scrolly. Again, just looking at this your sampler page here, you've got like where this it's the rotating square, which is that's a fairly classic sort of spirography type thing. But then that one in the middle that's like a flower, and did you have a template for that or did you just hand do that?
The one in the middle is a template. That's one. What I do is that's one I found online. I actually haven't turned that one into a cookie yet. That was a pattern I found online, so I was going to find a way to translate it into something to make it my own, which that one I haven't done yet, so you won't find that online. But the other ones, you will. There's a solid one. If you're looking at the one with the blue background,
yeah.
the bottom right-hand one, is one of my favorites, the hexagon,
yeah,
and it's all solid. Now what I love about that one is what it ended up being was three-dimensional icing cookie. If you look further up on the page, it's all blue. It's the one that it starts in the center, and that is actually the exact same piping sequence.
Right, so that's let me sort of unpick, if you don't mind, giving secrets away a little bit. So, like again, looking up a little bit, on the 4th of February, the blue one. So,
yes.
You're picking a point and you're drawing a line straight across, and then from like just adjacent to that point, going. But you obviously again have an order to do them, so they all cross the same way at the same time. If you it's the rotational symmetry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like looking at this blue one, is it you did all of one color and then all of another color and all of another color?
Yeah.
Right. But then sometimes obviously you've got the other ones where you interlace them. So you must be switching colors constantly for those ones.
Yes. It depends on which one. Sometimes I'm not sure which pattern you're talking about.
Thinking of, let's see. Okay, well, so like on March 3rd, you've got these ones where it's the pink and purple and yellow and sort of teal. Like it's very 80s monitor sort of colors, which I just love. And it's like a flower. You're talking about the four interwoven triangles.
Oh, yes. That one there.
So that one, you must be switching colors constantly because they're interlaced. I think that's where you're seeing people talk about your patience, because it's also your focus. Because if you need to change a diaper in the middle of that, like that's going to be a bad time.
No, I can have, when I do my cookies, honestly, I can have no one in the house because I have messed up. I have done patterns and with people in the house, if someone's talking or if I'm interrupted, I can mess up big time. So I like it when everyone's out of the house and quiet. That's when I prefer to work. Sometimes there are people in the house and I'm constantly getting up, you know, with kids to do stuff. And so I might get a little bit done and go back to get a little bit done. But I find, especially with the needlepoint, I tend to make mistakes. So I like either everyone out of the house or, you know, sometimes if it's at night and they're all watching movies, I'm not a huge TV person. I'd rather just be, you know, I'll be in the other room just piping lines through my cookies while they're watching television. But so this one, it was all interwoven lines. And when I did that one, I immediately, for me, when I had piped the white sketch, I immediately saw, like I tried to look at it and see what can I turn this into? And I immediately saw four interwoven triangles. And I thought, what can I do to really, really make that stand out? And so I thought, you know what, let me do obviously four different colors that are all very, very different from each other so that you can see the triangles. And actually the fact that it's 3D was by accident as well. I actually didn't mean for the icing to be 3D. It actually just started to turn out that way.
Oh, wow.
So
because it's such a good effect.
A lot of what I do is, well, everything, almost what most of what I do is some sort of experiment, whether it's with color or with pattern. But there's a lot of the cool stuff I do actually is just accidental. Anything that's 3D, and I have another 3D cookie that's all blue that's kind of around the same.
Yeah, there was one just before it that was, there's one that's a gradient that goes, like, too whitish. The one where you say, I saw some beautiful bowls online that were carved out of wood and clay. That one?
Yes.
Yeah.
That one was actually, when I had piped it, I was actually making it flat. I didn't, you know, I was just piping it, and I was just going to pipe the pattern, and it was just going to be flat. And lo and behold, it started to build up. The icing started building up higher and higher, and so I kept going, and this is the result.
It's amazing.
So, thank you. Yeah, I still have this one, and it's one little piece broke. I actually did a couple of, but it's pretty much intact. And I actually had done a couple of, I think it was a two or three practice ones with different colors. I had done it where right now this one is a dark color in the center, and then it gets gradually lighter and lighter with the white outline. But I had done it just sort of a dark blue, lighter, lighter, like alternating colors, and it just didn't look right. So actually not on my Facebook page, but on my Instagram page, there's actually a video of I had my daughter do it, of my daughter. She's actually breaking up the cookie. She's actually crushing the icing.
Oh, wow.
It's actually kind of good. It's one of those we're into those satisfying videos. The kids were looking at all those, you know, when they take the slime and they start, you know, mushing their hands in it.
Yeah.
And everything. And so we're looking at all those satisfying videos. So I thought, oh, let's make a satisfying video with my cookie, and it will smash the icing up. And so she's got her little, she's breaking it up, and yeah, it's really good to watch. So I'd definitely recommend someone take a look at that one.
Well, I'll link to it in the show notes. And yeah, I've just pulled it up. I'm not going to play it right now because it'll be, you know, loud into the thing. But I can see like the still of like, it looks like a knife or scissors or something just poking in there. And part of me like is stopping breathing like, no, no. But then I also want to see.
I know. I thought that would be a good one to show. But that's not the original. That was my practice one. So yeah, the original is still here. So no worries about that. But and that cookie took me an entire day to do. So,
I bet.
And I did it, yeah, three times I did it. So that's a lot of work going into each of these pieces.
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay because you're awesome.
So, and I always think, you know, if I don't post for a while, it's usually because I'm experimenting or practicing. So, you know, it takes a long time. So these things, it'd be nice to post every day, but that's a lot of, I would love to post every day. I would love to be able to just spend my whole time doing cookies, but yeah, there's other things I like to do sometimes. So,
I mean, like going back to what we were saying about having to concentrate, I can see like with some things we do as sugar artists, if you mess up, you can fix it. Like I can even see to some extent with the embroidery, if you do the wrong dot, you might be able to lift it off. But with these interlaced ones, no, you make one mistake and that's it. Like the whole pattern, because what makes it so beautiful is that regularity. And yeah, I can just imagine the stress of being 2/3 of the way through and doing a wrong line, and how I would be using all the rudest words at that point.
You know what, actually, or being, you know what, I've actually broken. It's sometimes it's not so much that I make the mistakes. I do make mistakes, but it's, I'll tell you, I'm a klutz, and I've broken a few cookies. But honestly, it sounds weird, but I just take it all in stride and I just do it over again, and it actually doesn't bother me. It's one of those things, I don't know why. I just think, oh, well, I think it's probably because I like doing it. So and it's not work. It's relaxing. And sometimes when I redo it, it actually ends up looking better. But I've broken a few, and I've my white tiger I did. Oh, my white tiger.
Oh, the tiger. Oh my God, the tiger.
I piped the entire. First, I piped the grid, and it looked awful. So then I piped it again. gain, I think I got about two-thirds the way through, and I made a major mistake. So I had to do it again, and I got a little bit more than two-thirds of the way through, and I made another major mistake. So I piped it again, and I piped the entire thing, and I looked at it, and the colors were too dark. It actually looked like it was nighttime. So I piped it again.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the final, and that's the final result. So, yeah, so I know it's when I do these things, it's not, you know, like I just pipe a cookie and it, you know, magically it turns out perfect the first time. A lot of the times I do practice a lot and I do experiment and I do make mistakes and I do it sometimes several times before I get it right. And so what you see is, you know, the result of hours and hours of work sometimes for one cookie and done over and over again.
You mean you're a professional who practices and hones your craft, and it actually takes a lot more work than anyone who doesn't understand thinks?
Yeah. I don't want to be. I know I post usually. I just post the final thing, but I don't. I think for anyone who's starting out, and you know, they look online and they see all these pictures and they think, wow, that's amazing. And I want people to know that you know, it doesn't matter how good you are at anything. You know, people make mistakes and we mess up and we're still, I'm still learning, you know, I'm still, every time I do something, sometimes I do it and the colors are all off, or sometimes it just looks wrong, or these are the final results, but they're, you know, hours of learning. I'm still, you know, learning. And if you look at what I post, I actually don't have a lot of cookies. I actually, in terms of experience, you know, there are people who make thousands of cookies, and if you look online, you can see I actually have not made that many cookies in the grand scheme of things. I actually, it's just one focus on it, and I teach myself and I learn, and when I get it, then I post.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a lot of work that goes into everything. But I think it's, to me, it's like, if you know, if you work hard at it and you focus and you practice, then this is the result. But that's how I look at it.
Yeah, well, I mean, your results are obviously gorgeous, but no, I mean, like, that is important to hear, and that's one of the things, one of the reasons I started my blog in the first place, why it's called Eat the Evidence, is the whole concept that everyone should, you know, if they have the time and inclination, should play with edible media, and if it goes horribly awry, you can eat that cake, and no one needs to know that you did a terrible job of buttercreaming it, like, you know, no one's crumb coat is good the first time. Nobody levels the cake the first time properly. Nobody, the first time anyone pipes any line, it wiggles, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially until you learn that you have to pick it up and not drag.
Yes. Yes.
That's like,
yeah.
I mean, I look at your straight lines and I know that I have to pick it up in the air and not drag. I'm completely intellectually aware of that. And if my hand doesn't hurt, and if all the icing gods are in the, you know, like the consistency has come out right, and they, you know, my hand isn't too hot, I can pipe a straight line. I don't think I could pipe 50 or hundreds. I just couldn't. That's why I can really respect what you do, because I know I can model for 20 hours in a row if I have to. I can pipe for about 10 minutes. Then I just have to do something else because my hand, I mean, it's like with the knitting, you know, I can knit for a while, but then if I knit for more than an hour without stretching, I'm going to be in pain all night.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I've piped, my gosh, thousands of lines, tens of thousands of dots.
Must be, yeah.
And thousands of lines. But when I first, my very, very first one, I actually got a pencil and marked the center line on the cookie. It was just a small cookie. Marked the center line, and then I used tick marks, and I marked ticks all the way around the cookie, and that was my guide to get my line straight. And you know, after you do it so many times, you can judge by eye how close the lines are, and you know that they're straight. But at first, you just practice, and that, to me, I think it is, you know, and everyone, I think, you just do whatever you, what works best for you. For me, it's lines. For me, I can't do, you know, I couldn't do fondants and that sort of thing, or, you know, anything. That's not where my skills are. My skills are obviously lines and that sort of thing. But I think you just find what you really, really enjoy. And just, if you have a passion for it, just work on it and keep doing it over and over again. And eventually, I think you can improve and it's great. If you look at my early cookies, anything I've done, when anything I did in the beginning, awful, really, really, really bad. I remember being proud of these, looking at them and thinking, you know, they don't look that good, but I'm proud of them. But it's just practice and a desire, and you put your mind to it and that sort of thing. And that's the whole, I look at it, find what you love, find what you're good at, and just keep at it.
Yeah.
You know, And if you make a mistake, you eat it.
That's right. Exactly. See?
No one wants to know.
Or even like, you know, I remember the very early days of Mythbusters, you know, failure is always an option. Failure is mm-hmm. data. Failure. I mean, like failing when you're on deadline sucks. Like, that's not the time. But as you say, when you're doing experimenting time, failure is really crucial to what we do because... Well, okay, I'm looking at your tiger right now. It is so brightly colored, and you needed to know that at the first time that the colors were too muted.
Yeah.
So how many colors are in that thing? Do you remember?
It's either 9 or 13. I can't remember. It's not a lot of colors.
See, because it looks like it must be 20 again, but that's needlepoint. I mean, needlepoint is good at that, doing that sort of pixely art thing. And so, I have a question too about, so when you pipe your grid, do you do all one way and then the other, or are you weaving it?
No, all one way. So all horizontal, or sorry, all vertical first, and then I do horizontal second. I just like to do my grid so that when you look at them, you see horizontal. And my grids, by the way, aren't perfect, but the reason I like to do horizontal lines is because if you're looking at the cookie and you're looking, seeing the vertical lines on top, your eye can see if the vertical lines aren't perfect, your eye can see it because your eye is looking from top to bottom, bottom to top. If you see the cookie where the lines are horizontal, your eye can't tell as well that the lines aren't perfectly straight from side to side. So there's a little trick. I should probably post, I think, sometime just a grid. But they're actually not perfect. And what I'll do though, when I do pipe, I take my scribe and I will move a line over, you know, if it's based incorrectly, or part of a line. The bottom lines aren't as important because you don't them as much as top lines that you see.
Right.
I don't pipe perfectly all the time, so I'll just take my scribe and just my eye gently move it over. But the key is try and line the dots up too. That makes a difference. It's to line the dots up, and also mm-hmm. pattern can sort of fool the eye as well.
That is really cool. I kind of, like, in all that free time, I totally have. I want to do, like, an experiment now where it's, like, the same design, but one is with, you know, emphasizing the vertical and one is the horizontal, and see, do people, but, like, I can't do that because I can't pipe the two cookies evenly enough as a control. Do you know what I mean? Like, so mine will just look different because both will be equally sloppy in different ways. Yeah,
a little trick. Practice going. It's a little trick, but yeah, that's how that works. Now, the needle points are larger too. The smaller cookies, it's easier with smaller cookies. Obviously, it's easy to line the lines up because you're not going a great distance. So that's easier as well. But yeah, that's my little trick. And I you know, same thing with making mistakes and that sort of thing. I've learned so much just from all the mistakes that I've made. Whether it's piping consistency, that sort of thing, or, you know, piping, whether I'm doing it horizontal or vertical, just making mistakes. And that's how I learned over the years.
You learn your consistency. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, because I watch a lot of cookie videos, and I've bought Mallory May's classes on Craftsy, and I got, you know, Julia Usher books, and I can lose a day watching Julia Usher videos. That's just, like, awesome. Sweet Ams, Sweet Sugar, but all these different people, and they all have their lists of icing consistency, or, you know, how many seconds it takes to fall in, or drip off, or fold over, or whatever. And at the end of the day, newbies always have all these questions. Well, but how much, and what, and everything, but you have to do it. You just have to do it and learn your icing, your sugar, in your area, and your humidity, and your temperature, with your hand heat. It is a kind of a wizardry to it that you have to practice it to learn.
Yeah, I know. And it's so frustrating in the beginning because I remember reading that too, where they would say it's something you just have to do. They can tell you the icing consistency, but you have to work with it over and over again, and you have to make, I can't tell you how many times I've had to empty my piping bag because my consistency was all wrong. So I had to empty it and either add water or make it thicker and to get my piping lines right, or whatever I was making, whether it's flowers or anything like that, just to get the consistency right. But you have to do it over and over to understand it. And the only way to understand it is to get it right sometimes, but to get it wrong sometimes too, because when you get it wrong, you understand what not to do. And I think when someone tells you something, you know it, but when you actually do it yourself, that's when you understand it.
Yes, 100%.
You know, how it works. Yeah, so it's just really just years of just trying and experimenting and yeah, honestly, you make mistakes, but you learn what not to do. But when you learn what not to do, that teaches you what you should do, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense because, again, I've got crafty classes and I've watched demos. I go to cake shows and whatever, and I see someone do something and I'm like, oh, I now intellectually understand how to do that technique. And until, you actually try it, you may even watch 10 videos and you think, I know. Okay, you push your thumbs in to make the eyes and you bring the nose forward and then you do the little swoop with your fingers to make the mouth. I've watched at least 20 people do that. But until you sit down and do it and you go, oh, how come this face is completely deformed now? and you realize, oh, because one of them's using modeling chocolate and one of them's using fondant and another one's using gum paste and one of them has hot hands and one of them's really good at it and one of them's a beginner. And, oh, it's like you have to try it. And I need to have one of those Hermione time turners so I can try all the things.
I know. There's so much. But you know what? There's so much. I think I love this sugar art. Honestly, I think I see so much out there, whether it's cookies or cakes and cupcakes and everything out there. There's just so much art and looking at all the talent that's out there. And I love all the videos that are out there that people have. It's just so much that you can absorb. And then once you absorb it, hopefully you can try it yourself. Yeah. And work on it. And that's, I think, another thing is, when you look at way back in the beginning, there was almost nothing out there. And now everywhere you look, there's just so many videos and so much, so many techniques and so many people offering, advice on their craft. And I think it's actually wonderful that you can watch these videos and read blogs and that sort of thing and learn so much and hopefully get the technique down.
I mean, I just love watching how different people do different techniques, even if it's not something I'm going to directly do. It just, I mean, even just like what you said, like about the horizontal lines. Am I going to go pipe a needlework cookie tomorrow? I wish. Like, it's just not going to happen. I actually have a cookie project. Oh, I can actually say, because by the time this airs, it'll be done. I'm going to do like a 3D cookie. Like, the cookies will all be 2D, but they will make a 3D thing of a camping scene, because I'm taking it to a bake-off competition and a camp thing I'm going to. And most people are just bringing, like, dessert, right? And I'm bringing decorated cookies. And I know I'm getting no points for it, but it's me, so I have to do it. And I'll do some fondant, and I'll do some royal. But, like, so I'm going to actually tomorrow be baking cookies, but am I going to be doing a needlepoint one? No. like that's... do I wish I had time and patience to do it? Yeah, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. Maybe someday. You know what? Honestly, I keep telling myself I want someone to just accidentally buy me one of those, that Sugar Veil mat that does the... Then I wouldn't have to do the lines. And I think I would do needlepoint cookies if I didn't have to pipe the lines. Because I'm just really not... It's not even practice for me. I think I'm just not confident about the straight lines.
Yeah. No, I have that Sugar Veil mat, and I did use it once. It actually wasn't for needle points, but I do everything else. Everything is, I pipe the lines, and the lines are tedious to pipe. I do like piping the dots, but the lines, I'll be honest, sometimes I just would rather get them out of the way. Mm-hmm. use the sugar veil mat. The only thing for me with the sugar veil mat is that it's too wide. It's great. It's beautiful for needlepoint, but for the with the needlepoint that I do, the lines are closer together.
Yeah, so I wondered about that.
Yeah, so and that's another thing too. There's I could teach a whole bunch of information on this. Yeah, the lines. Another thing that makes a difference too is the spacing of the lines.
Right.
So that can make a difference with your needlepoint as well. But you're right, with the sugar veil, it'd be just there's your mat, there's your, and it looks beautiful though. I've seen some gorgeous, gorgeous needlepoint with the sugar veil, and it's so perfect and so lined up, and it's there for you, and you don't have to pipe hundreds of lines.
Yeah, but I can see what you mean because it is only coming in that in needlework terms, it's only coming in one point count.
Yes.
It's good. Like I've done enough needlework to know that there's like an I like 14 count for my cross stitch, because I don't like teeny tiny because my eyes will bug out. But I've sometimes looked at patterns I want to do cross stitch in, and just so we're clear, I'm into the subversive cross stitch. I'm into cross stitch that's using that traditional technique to cross stitch really inappropriate things, swear words, violence, you know, because I just find that really the juxtaposition really funny. But when I look at designs, I'm like, oh, that's a lovely design. Oh, that's the teeny tiny one. No, hang on. Oh, if I want to make that in 14 count, it's going to be like 10 feet wide.
Exactly. But the sugar veil is good. If you're going to do just, a small portion of it, or if you have something specific, it's great. I would definitely recommend using it because you can make some wonderful patterns with it. If you're just doing, for example, just, maybe a checkerboard pattern or something, but nothing very, very detailed, but just, some sort of pattern that's random, it's perfect. It's easy, it's perfect, and you're good to go.
Using a number one tip, right?
A PME number one.
Right. So that's small, but that's not like, because I've used a 00 and that once, and that was done. I'm never using the 00 again.
You know what I was going to tell you? Actually, sorry, I use a PME number one, but I just, on the last needlepoint, I switched to a 00.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's nuts. I say that.
Because I decided I'm actually making my lines a bit closer together. So you can use the one is perfect. There's nothing wrong with a one. But I have used a 00 and I can make my icing a little thinner because when you use when your icing's thinner, it tends to spread when you pipe your lines. So if I make my icing thinner and I use a double zero, the lines will be thicker than if I use stiffer icing. Consistency. So I do use a 00 and I do like that because I'm constantly learning and constantly experimenting, but I thought, what would happen if I used a 00 and maybe my dots would show more as opposed to my lines showing, because sometimes with a technique I don't want to show the lines as much. I want the emphasis to be on the dots, whereas with a one you'll see more of the line.
Right.
So, and it just depends on what I'm doing. But again, it just comes down to what I'm doing and experience and that sort of thing. The one is perfect. And definitely I love the PME. I can't say enough about it. My lines come out so perfectly. I don't use tipless. I've tried tipless, but with the consistency, it doesn't work. You have to use tip, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely recommend a tip for sure.
I only ever use tipless when I'm like doing, something where someone's not paying me, but I'm coming in teaching a large group of people, like as a volunteer, and I'm doing tipless because I'm just not going to go buy 50 tips. Like that's when we're using, and then cutting the tiniest little, like I just did that last week for my secondary WI here that I'm involved with. And we did wet on wet basic cookies, like just really simple, super beginner, you know, showing them the magic of when you can swirl things, you know, so that kind of level.
Yeah, but the marbling.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And then like the magic of the drawing of I'm getting the jargon, and I was going to say cocktail stick, toothpick, cocktail stick, whatever, the pointy thing that you drag through and you make the various pattern. But so I'm going to guess when you're talking about using the double zero, is that these roses that I'm looking at?
Oh, with the black background?
Yeah.
That actually is just, it's a gridless one. There's no grid there.
Oh, because I was thinking, because I can't see the lines at all. So is that why they'd fade into the background? But that would be why, if you didn't pipe the grid.
Yeah, for that one, I tried piping a grid. And what I first said was a black grid. I didn't want to do a white grid, and I tried a black grid. But again, for that one, if you see the lines through the roses, it didn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
You needed just to see the roses and nothing else. Unlike some other things, you can see the lines, and it's not a big deal. But for this one, to show the lines, it just didn't look right. So there's actually no grid for this, just dots.
Wow.
So
you obviously just have a good eye for the straight line then, because that unless you're using some kind of projector or something, if you're just effectively
this one I have different, you know what, that's one day I'm going to teach. So I have some techniques, different techniques, the, you know, things for piping, you know, all those geometric patterns. Depending on what I'm doing, I'll pipe lines on the cookie and then I'll line it up. You know, sometimes I'll follow the lines. There's lines I follow, and sometimes it's just a starter lines, and then I just take it from there by eye. And then some things, I have different techniques where, like this one is not obviously done by eye because there's no way I could line that up myself. So, but there's different techniques I use that hopefully one day I can go around and teach.
Yes. Please do.
This one's not done by eye. I'm not that good.
Well, I mean, like, I would right now, and I'm not blowing smoke, because I know a lot of people will say, oh, you should put out a tutorial, and then you do, and, like, they don't come and buy. So I am not lying to you when I say, if you posted a tutorial on, like, some of the geometric ones, like, because the order does matter so much, I would buy that tutorial and maybe actually sit down and do it at some point. there's that two-folded thing of I've bought the class / tutorial and now I actually have to do the work, like we were just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. Would I buy a needlepoint tutorial? Not necessarily, because I understand conceptually you make the grid and you fill it in. And because I do it as an actual craft, I understand that, how to do that. But yeah, if you did, like, on your one that's got the blue background and all your different things, if you did, like, a mathematical, like, you know, PDF or something online, on, because again, I probably, if I sat here and thought about it, I could work it out. I'm nerd mathy enough, and again, remember my spire graph enough to do that.
Yeah.
But if you put out a PDF along those lines, I'm guessing it would probably sell, because I think what probably intimidates a lot of people is the order, is not understanding, and how do they consistently do it. So if you say, in a numerical way, you take your pink and from point one to point eight, and then turn the cookie from point two to point nine or whatever.
Yes.
If you had a methodology like that that was written out, I bet that would sell.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not gonna lie. I've tried videos and I showed my kids and they don't allow me to buy them. They're not that good. So I'm trying. Videos, and I don't know, I'm not that good at it, so I'm not that tech savvy, but hopefully I will be able to do something. I do try, I promise you, I do try. I have, if you look, if on, and again, I think I don't have it on Facebook, I have it on Instagram. There was one video of me piping lines. It's just showing I do pipe straight lines, but they're not perfect. but just a show, and it blurs in and out, and that's kind of the extent of how I do videos. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe, I'm hoping my kids get old enough to videotape me. Even the one of me of the cookie icing being smashed. That's actually my daughter.
Right.
So she said she's the one who filmed it. She's the one who smashed it. So it's not even me. So, but you're right. I think it is. It's there in my mind. So, yeah. Hopefully, I will put a video out and sell, because that would be good.
Yeah, because video is a whole another ball game too. I mean, like we were just talking about, you know, with the photography, with videos, there are a lot of super talented sugar artists making very mediocre videos. And it's not because they're not good at what they're doing. And some of them, I know people who can teach in a room and light up that room and are amazing, but somehow you point a camera at them and they turn into a monotone and they're really stiff and they're like, like they get nervous. And I've seen that happen so many times. And then even if you're a natural in front of the camera, you have to edit it. And that's a gargantuan task. I mean, editing this podcast is eating my life right now. Just so it takes you when you do digital media like that, anywhere where you're speaking or moving, that's really hard. You have to worry about how many takes do you do and what if you flub it. I mean, in this podcast, when we flub stuff, I edit it because they can't, there's no skipping. Yeah. I mean, there's not going to be that jump cut, but in videos, you got to worry about jump cut. So yeah, that's why, I mean, I've done a couple videos and I'm like, that was really hard and tedious. How about I just do a PDF instead? That's, I think your return on investment for someone to buy like a $2 PDF or £5 or whatever, like depending on what country you're in again, I think you probably make more money to your time, but some people want a video. So you have to know your audience.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the PDF would be good. But, yeah, I know. And I did actually find a video of myself piping one of my cookies. And it was 10 minutes of video I shot. I totally forgot about it. And it's painful to watch in the sense that it's so slow. It's worse than watching paint dry when I do these cookies, because it takes, you know, like I say, if it takes hours and hours and hours just to watch me piping one line, it just takes forever for me to pipe. Mm-hmm. Literally takes forever just to pipe one line. Mind you, with something like this, I think even teaching in person, although you reach a smaller audience, I find that something like this, in terms of getting the consistency and showing how to, get your lines to pipe, to pipe straight, because there's different techniques. It's not just simply just, piping from left to right or something like that. There's different techniques to actually pipe a straight line, and different than what I've seen in any other videos. When I look at the videos, I think, no, that's not how I do it.
Right.
But I would love to be able to actually in person and just to sit with people and say, here's how you hold your piping bag, and here's how much icing you need to put in, the best amount of icing, and here's the different icing consistencies. And the PDF or the video, you can show it, but it's not quite the same as if you're actually showing someone in person.
100%.
Yeah, which is why I know there are, a few people that go around and travel and teach. And I went to Marta Torres, the Cookie Lab. I actually took one of her classes. And to watch the video is one thing, but to actually sit in the class and have someone teach you and to explain it and to see how she does it, and it's a whole different thing. And you get it more.
Yeah.
You understand it more. So maybe in the future that might come up too. So.
Yeah,
I hope.
Well, that would be awesome. I mean, I happen to know that the Austin Cake Show would like more cookie artists to apply for the teaching slots. So, of course, on the flip side, I've just had to say that I can't travel to Austin anymore because of political reasons we're not going to go into in depth on this podcast, but everyone knows exactly what I mean. Well, because I was a Canadian immigrant to the U.S. I got U.S. citizenship. Now I'm in the UK and I have UK citizenship, so I have three citizenships. But because of what's going on, my family has declared we just don't feel safe going back because we don't know if we'll lose our citizenship while on the wrong side of the border or what might happen. And so because I'd have to, for the 2019 Austin Cake Show, I don't know if you know, it's always the last weekend of February, last full weekend of February. And so I had to commit a couple weeks ago because I was running the kids' classes and we needed to get the photos up and the samples and all that stuff. And basically when that Supreme Court decision came down, I was like, that's it. I can't come because I can't commit now because I don't know how bad it'll be in February. But I don't know how, you know, again, because I've heard, you know, traveling across the Canadian border, they're searching cell phones and all this nonsense too. But you, I mean, long term, that is, I can tell you, the Austin Cake Show is courting cookie people. This just might not be a great year to try.
No, that's okay. You know what? I might, a few more years. I know my kids are, they were young when I started. They're getting older. So
yeah, that makes a difference.
Eventually they'll be, they'll be independent and mom can do whatever she likes. Mom can go do a few more things. Like I'm slowly getting my freedom back.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
How old are they?
I've got 14 and 11.
So okay.
We're getting there. Yeah. We're getting there.
Yeah, I have 5 and 12.
Okay.
So, the 12-year-old is what we now call vaguely self-cleaning. Like you can send them to shower and they're not going to die. Like you don't have to cut grapes. You're not if they make a mess, you can make them clean their own mess. You just can't rely on it being a good job.
Well, my daughter's 14, and honestly, when she was 3, we could have left her at home alone. That's how independent and how, she is. But then my son's a bit younger, and I don't know, hopefully, he's the reason. when my kids get a bit older, I will, definitely something I'd like to do is teach in person. Because I think there's something to be said for that. And I think you learn so much more in person. And it'd be nice to meet people too, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice to meet people who are, doing the same thing as me. Everyone, when I talk to everyone here, their eyes glaze over. Cookies, not cookies again. So this is nice to meet, cookie friends and cake friends and people in the business and that sort of thing. So hopefully in the future, I'll be able to do that.
Yeah, I keep saying when this podcast makes me so famous that people are throwing buckets of money at me. Like, I pay money to make this. It's not lucrative. But I would love to just go to more cake shows. I mean, it's just occurring to me, there must be a big cake show in Canada, but I can't even name what it is because I started doing this after I left Canada.
Yeah.
There must be something.
No, I think there's something in London. In December, they have some cake competition, but not that I know of.
Oh, see.
There's nothing. There's Cookie Con.
Right, there's yeah.
I don't know about cake, but I'm not really into the cake world per se, so I'm not quite sure if there is anything. But yeah, usually it's the States. They have everything.
Yeah, but just because it's huge. They got cookie cruises now. I've had some friends go on some of these cookie cruises.
I know. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I mean, again, from Canada, you need to get to that port of call in, Florida or whatever. That's half a vacation away already, isn't it? I mean, depending on, dollar conversions and,
I know. Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah.
Canadian. Once you look at all the prices and everything, you start converting to Canadian dollars, and it's like, I don't know. maybe in the future, but that would be nice. I mean, I'd love to go to some of the shows and even again to Cookie Con or something and meet people, that sort of thing. But hopefully in the future.
Yeah, there'll be.
It'd be nice if they had something in Canada that I know of. Again, I don't know, but it would be nice if there were some sort of convention here.
Yeah, I need someone to call in. If any Canadians are listening and screaming at their iPod player, or whatever, right now is going, no, we have this great show. Well, then call it in and let us know because I obviously don't even know about it. And I guess the other solution is in all that free time you have, you could start one.
I think there's a big I think there's a big show at the International Center in Toronto, now that I think about it. There is some sort of baking show, but it's a baking show, not maybe not so much a cake show per se, but I'm pretty sure it's a baking show in Toronto.
There's a lot of that. I mean, sometimes I see, because again, and I'm in this weird sort of position where kind of I do cakes, kind of I do some cookie stuff, but I also have friends who are pastry chefs. So there's like the pastry world, and then the, and like, it's, then there's sort of like this gradient of like the pastry world going into then the industrial baking world has its own shows too. And they're not, I mean, they might be doing decorating there, but it's on a different scale. Like they're not talking about hundreds of lines on a cookie. They're talking about a machine that can generate at a hotel, like in Dubai, where they have to do, you know, 5,000 desserts a night, you know, all perfectly piped the same. So that, again, the pastry world has that whole show thing. And then there's like here and in now spreading through Europe, there's these cake and bake shows, but they're much more baker oriented. They have like a bit of a decorating arm, but hardly any cooking from what I've seen. It's very focused on baking, the sponges and the bakes, and again, some of the pastry aspects, the chocolate and the chocolatiers and that kind of thing. And then I here now, I live here, I go to Cake International, but I couldn't afford to from North America. That would have been ridiculous. And it's like, that's the biggest cake show, at least as far as I've heard. Apparently there's some Italian ones coming up now. And then, yeah, then now in the cookie world, there's Cookie Con, Cookie Cruises. And then, like, so many of the cookies are coming out of Italy and such, so I'm sure there must be some big cookie shows out that way.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah. So, just in, with all that unlimited budget we have, we could just travel to all these things and...
No.
and just learn and play and have a universal basic income.
No. Give myself a few of these... $500 needle points.
That's right.
I go on a few of those cruises.
Yeah, we'll just live in a paradise where everyone has enough of an income that they can support the arts casually. Oh, I see your, you know, cookie that made you took you 2 days to make. I'll pay you $300 for that. Yeah. And eat it. Nom. Yeah, that's a fantasy.
Nice, I know. Most people are more $3. $3!
I know, right?
Okay, guys, whatever you're working on, it's time to take a stretch. Put your piping bag down, put those tweezers down, put whatever you're working with down. Stretch your hands, stretch your arms, do a big stretch back. You're going to feel so much better after you do this, trust me, guys. Okay, big stretch. Oh. Give your shoulders a bit of a shake. Right? Doesn't that feel better? Okay, now you can get back to being awesome.
I know, that's why I think I do some basic cookies too, but it's what the market will bear and what people are willing to pay. And I think if it's a special occasion, they'll pay some, you know, if it's a wedding or baby shower, that sort of thing. But,
yeah.
You know, people aren't going to go to, you know, someone's house and bring $200 worth of cookies or $100 worth of cookies, you know, that's for sure. So, but I think it's, you know, for a wedding, if you think about, you know, $5 or $7 for, you know, a cookie. It's not expensive if you're giving that out as a little gift as opposed to the box of chocolates or something. The box of chocolates costs, I think, $4 or $5 anyway. So
that's right.
You know, and I think the cookie looks so much more personal. So yeah, for that. But you're right. Sometimes people, it depends on the market. You know, I know there's some places where they won't pay a lot. I think in Toronto and this area, they're, you know, people have a little bit more money there, hopefully willing to spend, you know, a little bit, you know, $5 on a cookie is not as bad. You know, where I am too, I'm lucky because there are, you know, anyone that lives in, you know, Burlington, Oakville, Toronto, even in Hamilton, I'm lucky that there are people that can afford to pay a little bit for a cookie and, you know, meaning, let's say $5 or $7 or something like that. So obviously none of my other cookies, they're just more for show and eye candy, but it's nice when you can get people that'll spend a little bit of money.
Like if there's a technique I want to try, like I get this, there's a thing here called cake bag, which is like like loot crate and stuff, except it's cake tools. So you get random cake tools each month for, I think, 16 pounds or whatever it is. They're themed, and one of the themes was ice cream, and so it came with the little roller that does, like, the grid that looks like an ice cream cone, and then, like, a cutter, a cookie cutter that was an ice cream cone cutter. And I was like, oh, I want to make some ice cream cone cookies. I need an excuse to make that. Oh, look, a bake sale at the school. So I sat there and I rolled out, I did modeling chocolate because it tastes better than fondant, frankly. And then I piped the icing and I rolled out the cones just so I could use the roller, right? I mean, I could have piped them, but the whole point was I wanted to play with the roller. And then I just kind of mentally let it go. I'm like, I know these are not going to raise any more money, but now I got to try the technique.
Yeah.
And so if you keep it in that mindset, then it's fine. It's when you feel like, oh, I'm going to bring this and it's going to earn so much money, and then it doesn't, then it just, you're just gutted. Like, well, why did I bother?
Yeah, no. And you know what? That's the nice thing about the school. Well, actually, aside from sometimes you can't get the business, you know.
Yes.
You can't get business from it. But the nice thing is that you can experiment and you can do, you know, whatever you like. And you know, the kids will just happily gobble it up. So it doesn't matter if it looks awful and you know, that sort of thing. It looks cool to them. And you know, and the parents are happy to pay, you know, that small amount and great, and you get to try something new, and if it looks great, you've learned something, and if it doesn't, you know, you've contributed and the school's made some money.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, that's how I look at it as well, too.
Yeah. It keeps coming up. I don't know if you have anything like this in your area, but particularly in the U.S. and a little bit here, there are the groups that will, where you can donate, it's usually cakes, actually, but like Bake-A-Wish and things like that, or Icing Smiles. And it's, you know, to kids in hospitals or kids in abuse shelters or poor kids or at risk or whatever the case may be, depending on the charity. And those are also a good excuse to make something really amazing that you know you're not going to get paid for because you're donating it.
That's nice to do, too. Yeah, we have Icy Smiles, so okay. You're right. It's nice to do that and be creative, and it's nice that you're doing it for a good cause, too.
That's right.
Yeah, there's nothing in experimenting, and same thing with the cupcakes that I did for my daughter's graduation. I did, 200 mini cupcakes and 60 regular cupcakes, and then a bunch of cookies for the teacher. I did air quote regular cookies, school cookies for the teacher. Actually, yeah, they're on my Facebook page too, but yeah, it was, and I did it in 3 days. I was piping the cupcakes as there were three trips to the school, but I was piping the cupcakes that morning, and I impressed myself because I'm usually very, very, very slow, but I really impressed myself that I got it all done. But at the same time, I actually got a buttercream icing recipe that I think tastes pretty good. So I mean, if all those years of experimenting, you know, bringing my cupcakes at the end of the year and experimenting with different icing recipes and that sort of thing, you know, have an excuse with the bake sale at the end of the year, handing them out to the kids, then it's great, because with all that, I wouldn't have practiced otherwise. What am I going to do with all those cupcakes?
Exactly.
But I got to, I finally, I think, in my opinion, and whatever everyone else has been telling me, I finally have cupcakes that actually taste really good. So it's nice to be able to do that, to experiment and to, you know, have the kids try it and that sort of thing, and give your stuff away, because it's just an excuse. It's like an excuse, and it gives you a reason to practice. Mm-hmm. But also, you're doing, you know, it goes towards something good and to make people happy. So I always think it's like a win-win situation.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, if it leads to sales, great. I mean, every time I donate something fancy to the school, someone comes and asks. Of course, then they find out what I want to charge, which, to be fair, I have my prices very high because I actually don't want to take cake orders. Yeah. I definitely do not want to do like standard wedding cakes. I don't make flowers. I don't do that kind of stuff. But like, so I just did one for my daughter's school for their raffle. I did like a little dragon cake and people loved it. I mean, people actually loved it more than I expected. I thought it was okay. I thought it looked a little chicken-faced, to be honest. It came out a little more chicken than dragon, but okay, whatever. It was cute in a fugly sort of way. Whatever. I wasn't stressing because I was like, it's for the raffle. Like, it's just someone's going to win this who didn't even know that they wanted it. So, like, I'm not stressing. And I just wanted to try the technique where you take the straw and you make, like, the scales with the straw. And so I was like, I'm just playing and someone will win this. And then there was this huge response to it. And someone actually came up to me from school and said, could I order one of those? And so I'd sort of prepared for that, you know, done the rough calculation of what would I charge for that in my very high charging. And I said, 125 pounds. And she choked. She's like, oh. And I was like, yep, if you want me to make you one, I will totally make you one for 125 pounds. And I'm already booked out for the next 2 months. Cause I am like, not with cakes, but with life. So like I said, I'm going camping and all this stuff. So if someone wants to come and order one of those dragon cakes for 125 pounds, I'll do it. I'm just not going to count on any orders.
There you go. You never know. I've actually got a few cookie orders from school bake sales. So, you know, even if I break even, you know, with what I've made and you know, what I've donated, that's great for me.
Yeah.
So it gives me an excuse to make cookies and, you know, mommy's busy. She's making cookies. Everybody out of the house. So it gives me an excuse to do what I love to do. So, and hopefully maybe cupcakes might even lead that way too. But I love to do it. And if I can have a reason to do it because I'm being paid as opposed to doing it for free, then that's why the heck? Why not?
Well, I mean, I'm looking right now at your little cupcake there with the cute little rose on it. And I mean, people do love that stuff. I mean, we love doing this ornate stuff, but people like that cute little piped rose as much as like the muggles like that as much as they like your geometric shapes.
Yeah.
They're like, wow, that's pretty. That's pretty. That's pretty. And they don't really think one of those things took you 5 minutes and the other one took you 20 hours.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? The cupcake with the rose, that's what sells.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I have to, for me, it's diversity. And I think, you know, I like to do all those crazy patterns and anything ornate and spending, you know, 3 days on a cookie. I love to do that for the eye candy and you know, maybe one day to teach it too. But it's the basic stuff is what sells.
Yeah. Or so, competition. That's the other reason to do it. It's to put it in a competition because that's, I mean, some of the stuff that you're doing is so gorgeous and would do well at competition. And again, we talk about that on the show all the time. You have to know the flavor of the competition because if you're saying your lines aren't straight, I mean, they look straight to me in the photo, but I believe you when you say that they're not straight. And there will be some competitions that will punish you for that. And there'll be some where they don't care because the overall design matters more. So you would need to find the right competition where the right judges look at that piece and go, oh, look at the color and the depth and the way I look, like I feel like I'm tunneling into the blueness. You need that judge.
Yeah. As long as they don't eat them. That's all. Let me taste it now. No! That took me 3 days.
There are tasted ones, although I never... okay, so like there are some U.S. competitions that have tasting segments, but they tend to be separate and off to the side, often because of food regulations.
Yeah.
Like, so the Austin show we have a tasting competition, and how you take your entries in, it's a whole different section because it has to be hygienic. Whereas the cakes that are on the show floor, people are sneezing. Like, you know, that's not a hygienic environment. So.
Yeah, no, for me, when I do my actual cookie art, those cookies aren't meant to be eaten. So so that's where that's the kind of competition I like. So just their art, don't eat them, just look at them, frame them. That's what I like.
That is most of them. I mean, like Cake International has a couple of the cupcake categories are tasted. A lot of the, you know, because British people love their fruit cakes, right? Like, that's a thing. And until recently, like, all the wedding cakes were fruit cakes. And so if you were going to be a baker of any kind, you had to have a fruit cake recipe, and it had to be good. That was a major part of the industry. That has definitely changed since I've been here, but I'm definitely hearing about it a lot. And so I've been to some smaller British cake club type shows where there's just a table lined up of fruitcake, like completely naked fruitcakes, because the judges are going to taste and judge your fruitcake. And you got to remember, those cakes take 6 months to a year to make. Because you make it and then you steep it in alcohol for like months.
Yeah.
Which is I don't drink, so it's very all bizarre to me. But like, I have somewhere a photo. I'll see if I can dig it up for the show notes. I have a photo of this. It was the Taunton show that I went to, and there's just literally a table of like 30 or 40 fruitcakes. And it was the biggest category at the show. Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes that is a thing here, but usually the bigger cake shows, there'll be a... I had one that was tasted. Yeah, my Jack and Jill cupcakes, they were tasted. So, and that, it really does make a difference when you're, because normally when I'm competing, I'm using, you know, old fondant or, and obviously I'm washing my hands and stuff for color contamination, if nothing else. But like, I don't have to worry that I had a cold, right? I had a flu. I had some flu while I was desperately trying to get my competition entry done. I'm not infecting anybody because no one's going to lick it. But when someone's tasting it, yeah, it's a whole different, but that is rare, I think.
Yeah. I like just the design part.
That's the art for the art's sake.
Yes. That's what I like
creating
the art.
Yeah, and I'm totally with you on that. Sometimes people, again, the muggles, they don't get it, and they're like, well, but it's wasting food. And my answer to that, my clever / snarky answer to that is, nobody should be eating sugar anyway. It's terrible for us.
Yes, I agree.
It should just be a sculpting thing. Yeah.
It's art, but you know what I tell people too? It just so happens that the medium is sugar and flour, but it's art. It's just, you know, it's, some people use clay and some people use sugar or flour. That's all it is. That's just the difference. It's not meant to be edible, but you know, just like something made of clay is not meant to be edible. It's the same thing. That's how I look at it.
No one says, oh, you're wasting all that dirt making that pottery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we do stuff out of flour and eggs and butter, they're like, oh, you're wasting all that food. And it's like, oh no, we're doing something, you know, positive for society with the food. And honestly, with the sugar, people shouldn't eat the sugar. Like, it's just terrible. Right. I think we're really learning as a society, we eat way too much sugar. We should sculpt with it instead and get it out of the mouths.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. But I mean, people spend that much. They spend a lot of time. Even when you look at dinner, when people, you know, they spend so much time just to prepare your meal and the presentation on the plate and that sort of thing. That takes time too. So, you know, it's art, and sometimes it's art, and sometimes it's just art you eat. But you know what? If someone wants to spend, you know, $200 on, you know, their pastry, and they can afford to spend the $200, and they can afford to eat it. Knock yourself out.
That's right.
That's why
I
buy meat.
Yeah, and there's value also in a consumed art, because, I mean, that's partly how I got into doing cakes, was because I had been doing ceramics and beading and stained glass and all this other stuff, and our house was getting full. So, like, if you do it, if it's a consumable form, it goes away.
But you know what? I have to tell you, the pastries, the art form, sometimes they actually look so good that you want to eat them because they look so good.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, not, it depends on the crazy cakes and the crazy things like that, but just some of the art form, when people do anything with chocolate or anything like that, sometimes it just looks really delicious. You know, it can take hours and hours to make, but it just looks really delicious. And you just want to eat it because it just looks so good.
Yeah.
That as well too.
Yep. Or those, particularly the chocolate ones. If you can smell, have you ever watched like the videos around, like where people are doing the big chocolate sculptures, and like you can just smell how good that room smells. Oh my god!
No, and then take a bite of that big sculpture.
That's right.
I think I'll just stick to it's just art. You know, stick to it as a piece of art, and then I've got all my little sculptures, my little mini cookie sculptures all stored away in my little containers, and maybe one day I'll take them out. But it's just, you know what it is, it's a fun way to just relax, you know, when you do this sort of thing. Some people read, some people knit, you know, some people do yoga, I don't know, meditate, and for me, just piping
you know, dot after dot after dot is actually, it's relaxing. And you know, just so happens, like I say, it's sugar, but it's actually, I think it's relaxing just to sit there and you focus, and you obviously can't think of anything else and have your mind wander, because that's how the mistakes happen. But you sit there and you focus, and there's almost something zen like about it. It's just relaxing. It's quiet. It's nice when no one's around, and you just pipe and before you know it, you have a beautiful piece of art at the same time. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what draws me to it too. It's just as nice and relaxing and you know, it's peaceful.
Well, there are like Zen Buddhist / other, you know, religious meditative practices where you draw or color mandalas, or you make them in sand, or I mean, that is a legitimate meditative practice to make, particularly the repetitive patterns. So I can absolutely, yeah. 100%. Honestly, if it didn't hurt my hand so much, I would happily pipe lines for hours.
Oh, it's fun. You know what? It's fun. It's and then you get to be creative at the same time too. You know, you get to be creative, and you get to think about, you know, what colors should I use or what pattern, and it's, you're expressing yourself. But yeah, honestly, it's like some people hold a pen, a marker, a paintbrush. I hold the piping bag.
Yep.
Eventually what it is.
Yeah.
And I like it. So.
And you're good at it.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, and I get to experiment and, you know, keep doing it. And hopefully people like to look at it.
Oh, people definitely do. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, whenever I share one of your things, it's frequently I'm putting at the top, the notes like not cloth, a cookie. And my friend, because so many of my friends are crafty in other ways. So many of my friends do cross stitch or needlepoint or whatever. And they, when they are scrolling by, they assume, oh, look at that beautiful needle. Like right now I'm looking at the one of your six flowers. They look like cloth. They totally look like squishy cloth.
Oh, thank you.
It's amazing. It's not a complicated design. It's, you know, if I was doing that needlepoint, I would consider that a sort of a basic, you know, beginner cross-stitchy type thing. But it looks, that's what it looks like. It looks like a sampler that you've stitched, but it's icing.
Yeah, I don't have the patience for needlepoint. I don't have the patience for needlepoint, but it just, yeah, it's, I enjoy it. It's the pattern and it's the color. So hopefully can keep doing this for a while and hopefully get better at it, slowly improve as time goes by and experiment and, you know, come up with more crazy designs and patterns and we'll see where it takes me.
I am definitely following to see, because I'm already kind of drop-jawed, and wherever it takes you next, I can't even fathom, because it's so amazing.
Oh, thank you. I like to push myself and I just like to be different. I mean, I can follow the crowd and do what everyone else does, but I'll just blend in. And to me, it's all about, just pushing myself, just saying, what can I do that's the most complicated thing and test myself and how far can I go? And I experiment all the time. There's a lot of things I experiment with. I don't post because they're all kind of, you know, weird, and some are hits. There's lots of failures, but a few hits every now and then. Those are the ones I post. But yeah, it's just constantly just saying, what happens if I try this? What happens if I try that? And just experimenting. Because anyone can flat a cookie, and anyone can, you know, drag your scribe through the icing in a marble. That's good. But, you know, to me, it's about taking it to the next level and seeing what else I can do you know, and hopefully inspire a few people along the way.
Well, I'm definitely inspired. I mean, I'm still not going to make one of them tomorrow, but I'm fantasizing about it, which, you know, that's,
okay.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it really is gorgeous. And I'm so glad that you came on to talk about it. And I'm so looking forward to the stuff you're doing. And honestly, if you did a planned, detailed PDF of do it in this order, I would buy it and try it at some point. My hand would fall off. But then, you know, I would plan to not have to do anything for a week afterwards.
Well, I'll start simple. Thank you for the suggestion. Yes, I'll definitely definitely something to think about there. Yeah.
In all that free time, you totally have.
Yeah. When the kids go back to school. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know where we go.
Yeah. Well, I should probably let you go because it's almost 12:30 here.
Okay, I'll let you go then. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming on. I love your work. I'm gushing because I mean it. and I'm a fan, and I can't wait to see what you come up with next.
That's great. Thank you. I will get right to it.
Go to work and entertain me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. And we'll put in the show notes, I'll put links to all your stuff so people can come see all the pretties that we've been talking about the whole time.
Perfect. That sounds great.
All right. Thanks so much.
You too. Bye-bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Find what you love, find what you're good at, and just keep at it.